Hey, Bobby Manning, back on the mic. Been a week or two since we did this Dome Theory podcast. Glad you're staying locked in. All of my subscribers, if you're new, check us out on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, realbobmanning.com. Give us 5 stars. Give us your love. And it is all appreciated. Since we last talked, the bubble ran its course, flew by. Classic games left and right. We saw Portland take on the Clippers, 76ers, iconic matchups there. We saw the Mavericks, Luka Doncic and his incredible bump, iconic matchups. I think of Denver and Utah. We get that round one now after those two teams played an incredible game a couple of days ago. Portland, Boston, we get 76ers, Celtics. Philly comes in hampered, injured. Still, deep-seated resentment on both sides of those matchups, even with how much those teams changed over the last 2 years since they met in the second round a couple years ago. And that vaunted Raptors-Celtics matchup that's been avoided for a couple years, incredible. Now, I have one gripe before we get into our interview with Snotty Drippin today. Snotty's with us. I think the last time we talked to him might have been episode 3. And we're in the 90s at this point, so to say it's overdue is an understatement. Today I'm going to talk to him about the bubble, the formats, why it turned out so good, why some players got a bump. We name our all-bubble team, or my all-bubble team. I pretty much had Snotty rate my teams in this, and we still went an hour 20, so that's how long we've been waiting to chop it up here. And then we reshape our top 25 list. Things changed this year. Kevin Durant, gone. Steph Curry, gone. Warriors as a whole, out of the door. That reminds me, Klay Thompson, still have to consider him up there somewhere too. We'll see what he looks like when he returns. For now, didn't include the injured stars, Kyrie Irving and the likes. We rebuilt the top 25 players in the NBA with a little bit of a look forward. You'll see where I put Luka Doncic, and it shows how I feel about him going into the future compared to some of the other superstars in the league at this age and status in their career. I talked to Jared Weiss about it on the podcast a couple weeks ago. We came to the conclusion the group stage felt wonky, didn't feel like messing with those middle seeds, but, and I'm going to use but a few times here, the middle seeds out west did all kinds of games, jockeying for position. They all clinched. They were not putting out their best lineups here, trying to find positioning. That could have been sorted out in a more natural way in a group stage style concept here. Now, is that the ruin of the future? Maybe could have played out better than this did. All I can imagine, though, is the Spurs, Suns, Trailblazers, Grizzlies came into this last day, and I wish they all had a chance to play each other during the course of this seeding process. The league had to be smashing its head in the desk when the Kings and Pelicans yesterday, or 2 days ago now, ended up being the only 8-seed relevant matchup out west. And another thing I mistook was how crucial, once all these teams got healthy, that 8-seed would be. There's no home court, there's no travel, and that goes for the top seeds and the lower seeds. But the environment here makes that 8-seed feel more important than I thought it was going to. And Damian Lillard, wow. What we saw him do tonight against the Nets just an hour ago, setting up Melo for the 3, down 2, getting the crucial steal. 150 points in 3 games, averages close to 40 during this seeding process, and they get the handle on the 8-seed after trailing by 3.5 games with 8 games to go. He came in and said, I'm only caring about this return if we have a chance. The league gave them a chance, and he took it, ran with it, and made it his own. This is what shocks me about him. He's a player with the power, with the tenacity, with the dominance to go out there and get any position he wants on the court, score from every level against whoever is put out there to guard him. Yet he still steps out to 40 feet to half court, the iconic shot. When we look back on this bubble and remember it as Damian Lillard's MVP stretch for 8 games, and he will be the MVP of the bubble. Stepping up from half court against the Nets, and bless the Nets, gave them crap. get to this in our chat with Saudi, had a concede on them. I thought they would fall into the floor all over themselves and be eliminated from the playoffs in this tragic first season of the Durant-Irving era. Nope. They found their old Atkinson selves from last year and played like they had the postseason on the line today. So all in all, this postseason format works for the NBA. Can't knock the Nets out of it. But all of a sudden, the Magic, who are about tied with Portland, Memphis, Suns right there, go 8-0, run by Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton and company, will probably be forgotten, even though they did everything in their power to position themselves. 8-0 is ridiculous. I saw something today that 1974 was the last time a team went on a stretch that dominant. It was seven games to end the season. I believe the team was called the San Diego Rockets. Know a little bit of NBA history. Wasn't familiar with that team. They went on a 7-0 stretch to close their season, missed the playoffs. Suns repeat that trend here. They came in with a long shot to get into the postseason and drew within a half game. I think they lose the tiebreaker with the Grizzlies, or they're a half game out from them. This is where it gets tricky for me. Orlando makes it in the East. The NBA gains nothing by Orlando being in there. Phoenix, who substantially could have boosted the star power of this postseason, given a team a tough series considering the stretch they're on, they're not even going to go. They're jumping on the plane. NBA security escorted them out. I wish they could have been in the stands rooting for the Nets. I wish they could have been visible. Could LeBron have been out there gauging his first-round opponents? They tricked us with the video boards because we saw those. They were fun. The TV crews keep alluding to them. And all it did was distract us from the fact that other NBA players cannot be seen reacting to these games, even if they're in these facilities. And I doubt they are, because they're in the hotels and such, or playing their own games in different stadiums when other games are going on. So we don't have that reaction, campus, community feel outside of Jaylen Brown throwing Donovan Mitchell on his story. So the big flaw: Suns knocked out. Spurs put up a great run to get in. And then the Pelicans, they weren't even deserving. They won 30 games this year. Think about that. The Pelicans, for all we anointed them, Zion Williamson, won 30 games this year. Nets go 36-36. Hard to hold them out. Magic depleted. Jonathan Isaac gone. Aaron Gordon banged up. Did they earn it during the season? Their record's not terrible. I'd still, at this point, considering how badly I expect them to get swept off the floor by the Bucks and Raptors respectively, could the NBA consider a wild card process? Maybe keep the play-in spirit alive there with those bottom two spots, make those teams travel for a longer stretch against the top seeds in the league, maybe 3 or 4 games out of a best of 5. That's where it irks me with this, because let's say they let Phoenix in as the wild card at large, so 4 teams from the West get in, which isn't exactly how it would have played out here. Maybe Phoenix subs in for Orlando. I think the Nets did what they needed to. Bless them. They proved me wrong. In this wild card system I present, they still get in. What do we do with a Phoenix? Do they go to Milwaukee? Phoenix to Milwaukee. Is that fair to Milwaukee to send them out to Phoenix twice? That's still, whether you're a 1-16 person, I am not, or you're dreaming up a wild card system to eliminate some bad East teams from the playoffs, that's what makes it difficult for me. The system worked, though, as I get in the with Snotty Dripping here.
I don't know if it's because we value basketball more after missing it for 4 months, but these 8 games felt so important. So many amazing ones. I think of Milwaukee, Houston. I think of Dallas and Milwaukee, that was a fantastic one. Portland, Boston was great. Pretty much every game Portland's been in, Portland Clippers, there's just been high level basketball. And it feels like so much happened in 8 games that if we were just looking at an 8 game sample in a normal season, it'd be like, oh, what the hell? It'd just be like another March.
You know what it is? I think the combination of things, right? Everyone was, they came back and they're very well rested, right? Everybody's, you know, mostly healthy except for, you know, guys got injured a little bit, you know, some guys, but and the lack of travel, Like, we know travel impacts basketball. We know it does, but, like, these guys have been healthy, no travel, and they've all been excited to get back, right? They all, like, NBA players know. They want to play basketball, and they also know we got 8 games to get us ready for these playoffs. So we've seen some really high-level basketball, and that's been like, really impressive. We've seen a lot of turnovers, which is fine. You know, you can expect that after, like, a 3.5-month layoff, 4-month layoff. And we've seen some really – the refs are calling it. This would be fascinating in a couple years for them to look back at all the data. Because you wonder, like, does the lack of a crowd mean that the refs are maybe more dialed in and looking for things? Because we've seen, I think the refs have been, we've seen a lot of foul calls. So
they've been tight.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's a good basketball, though. It's been a good comeback.
We're recording this on Thursday night. We're not going to get that Portland-Brooklyn result in by the time we're done here. But that West has come down to the wire. Portland has went on this unbelievable run. They're going to have a ton of regrets if they fall out of this, losing that Clippers game. That Portland-Boston one, people aren't going to look back on that, but they made this massive comeback, 20 points. They were down in the first half, and then they get within 3, and they just throw the ball out of bounds on the last play. That was a brutal loss,
too. Didn't they come back and take the lead for a couple times in, like, the late third?
Yeah. I think they had a 5
lead. Yeah, yeah.
So then they fall behind 3, and they had a last possession opportunity. They just threw out a bay. It was insane to me. And that was a big game for Boston, too, back when they were trying to get into the seeding game.
Yeah, so Dame is going to have 2 regrets, that Boston game and missing those free throws against the Clippers.
And it makes me mad because Memphis, all respect to them, but they're missing Jaren Jackson. They're missing the key pieces from that trade, Jay Crowder, Solomon Hill. They've deconstructed their roster a little bit, and they're not going to put up much of a fight if they're that 8 seed. And they still have the opportunity to have the game in hand there. So my thing is, I don't think this playoff format worked very well. We have a team in Phoenix that went 8-0. If we were emphasizing these 8 games, doing well here, if you do well, you can get into the postseason, and that team goes 8-0 and doesn't even get a shot, what they put together here didn't work.
So I'm going to disagree. I thought it worked very well because a team like Phoenix, nobody gave a damn about Phoenix at the end of the season before the season shut down.
That they were a lottery team.
Nobody cared, right? Dame, same thing with Dame and them. You're 3.5-4 games behind, 5-6. Nobody cared about them. It became a conversation. People actually cared about, like, their games actually mattered. Even if they don't get to the play-in games, we actually cared about Dame scoring 61. It wouldn't have mattered if this was a regular season. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, 3-4 games behind. It kind of wouldn't matter. Same thing with the Suns. This little run they had, 8-0. That's amazing. But, like, it wouldn't have mattered. We'd have been like, oh, end of the season. They're playing well because other teams don't care. Cool, they won 8 in a row. Nobody cared. I'm gonna disagree. I thought that it made it interesting for more than just the playoff teams, more than just seeding. We actually cared about 2 teams that are going to be in the lottery.
It took me 2 weeks to even notice Phoenix was out there when they were starting to plan and put this together. I saw Phoenix and I was like, what? Because you always imagine them being worse than they are. And they were actually decent coming into this, at least by the standards of the West. And they made a run. They transformed. And what this bubble showed me is those 4 months flew by. And teams like them, I think of a TJ Warren. Obviously, we'll get to our all-bubble team in a minute here. And other players around the league, Luka Doncic included, made massive strides, the kind of strides that you would have expected over a normal offseason. For that to happen within a regular season was pretty weird, and we didn't see it as such, kind of that one season and the next jump for some of these teams. But we saw some teams rally together and in 8 games re-identify themselves. I thought the Spurs looked like that. Utah looked a little rejuvenated here. And
see what I'm doing? I'm patting myself on the back because, like, yes, they had a full offseason. This is a new season. It's part of last season, but this is a new season. Now that Mikal Bridges came back looking like, oh, wow.
That's one. That's a good name there.
You know what I mean? So, like, yes, it's still part of the same season, but they had literally – and I get it. A lot of them – they found somewhere to play. These are NBA players. They find places to play. They find places to work on the game.
They didn't want to let us know.
Some people showed us. Like, look, follow social media. Some of these guys showed us working out. We saw Zion looking like – really fit, and then, like, somehow he came out of shape, which is really weird. So, yeah, man, this is basically an offseason, and it shows. It kind of shows. Like, these guys, like, the Suns came back a new team.
Will they go forward with this format? It felt like a special thing for this season, And I don't know how you'd make something like this work. I know our Keith Smith wrote about dropping off some teams after a certain point. That's another thing we haven't mentioned is all those trash teams got up out of here, and that made a world of difference. You didn't have to go up against the Knicks during this stretch or just have a throwaway game against one of those other teams. It was all the best of the best here. And it was a pretty – this showed, too, how much parity there was in the league this year compared to recent years. All these teams had a guy that could come out and compete for them on any given night. Even a Memphis with Ja Morant wasn't on the top end of this, but you know, that's a guy who was able to get them to this play-in tournament like it looks like they're going to be. This was a special format for this year, and yeah, I still have my gripes. You know, I don't want to leave this all on Memphis, because honestly, the problem here is that we're going to go into the postseason with a Brooklyn and an Orlando and leave out a Phoenix and a San Antonio, one of those other teams at the bottom there. New Orleans didn't deserve it, but even they'd probably be a better look than the Magic.
I think the Magic earned it. You know,
they fell behind the Nets.
Yeah, but they lost some key guys, right? Isaac went out. You know, but hey, Vucevic plays like he's a borderline all-star. I don't like him. I don't want him on my team, but the guy could play. Injuries suck. And yes, this would have been a perfect chance for the league to do away with conferences. This would have been the perfect opportunity for them to say, okay, we're going to do the same playing things, but once we get to the playoffs, let's do it with conferences, see them 1 through 16. That would have been awesome. But I think that the league got the ball on that one. But, yeah, I don't know. It was we all wanted basketball back, so we were really excited. And, yes, I almost said you were saying how every team has a guy, I almost said except for the Nets, but Caris LeVert's been really good. He's been really good.
He's one of my standouts.
So, yeah, man, I get it. Because, yeah, the Suns, I would much rather watch the Suns than the Magic. But yet, here we are. So, it is what it is. I think the league, I mean, honestly, again, let's be here. When they announced this bubble, I didn't think they would get this far. I didn't. I didn't think, I said, we're not going to see the finals. But, you know, zero positive tests so far. The basketball has been very entertaining, high level. These guys seem to be adjusting well to playing without a crowd. I got to tip my hat to the NBA. They put out a good product. So, yeah.
They did. There's going to be some sight forward, too. And it is hard to look forward right now. You got to just get through these playoffs and then go from there. But next season will be coming December, January. There's been talk of that other bubble. And then I think you got to look at the playoff format, too. I'm looking at the standings right now. Believe it or not, we just talked about LeVert. The Nets got 35 wins in the end. And they had a good stretch in the bubble. Over the last 10, they're 8-2. Which is impressive. I mean, they brought nobody down to Orlando, and they ended up coming out well out of it. And that puts them right in line with the Grizzlies, the Blazers. Those teams both had 34 wins. Phoenix.
Who's their who's their coach right now? The interim.
Jacques coach? Vaughn, the old Magic coach.
I think I saw some of the numbers. They said like the defense, the Nets defense has been, and the offense have been so much better under Jacques Vaughn. So we got to tip our hat to him. Yeah.
For sure, and they had guys in there trying to prove it too. The Chiozas and Jared Allen still has a chip on his shoulder, some degree, with this whole
playing really
situation.
Well. He's been playing really well.
So I gotta tip my hat to them too, because my college roommate, I gave him so much crap this year with the whole Irving saga, them bringing this dismantled team down to Orlando. I thought they might have fallen below the Wizards, and we want to talk about a team that did not come to Orlando with any sight on success. They fell behind the Hornets for a minute when they were down here, and they ended up moving right above them today with the win. But that's a team that didn't
they should have been
down
there.
Here.
Yeah, I get it. They had to bring somebody, whatever. But yeah, the Wizards, that was a joke. That was
my worst prediction. I thought the Nets might fall behind them. And instead, the Nets have probably 2.5 games on the Magic now. They're going to miss the Bucks. Toronto's been good. They had that great start, and they are 9-1 over the last 10. But as we get into some of the performers here, Siakam looked on the bottom end of the top line performers when we look at the stars of the league coming back. He shot 39%. His turnovers were right in line with his assists. Kyle Lowry was carrying them to some degree. And some of the Van Vliet's and Marc Gasol came back looking good. So they held them up. They came through it good, clinched that 2 seed. Could they be vulnerable at all, though, in
the
first or even second round?
No, I don't think maybe the first round, but so, look, they're the number 2 seed. They're going to be playing, I guess, the Nets, right?
Yep.
So, they're going to win that series because the standard, the tradition is the best play. If you have the best player in the series, you're probably favored in that series. And yeah. they're better than the Nets. But when they get deep in the playoffs, having the best player matters a little more. You need a guy who can just break defenses. Game plans don't matter. He's going to get you 25, 30. The thing about the Celtics is they got like maybe kind of three guys you can't really, like, you know, Tatum's good for 25, 30 any given night.
So that game was one of the more important ones for me. Boston goes up by 40. They end up winning by 22. Toronto had everybody out there and discombobulated. They were so bad that I'm like, this looked like a night out kind of game. And
I'm going to say that they were already locked into number two seed. They cared, but I also know that their coach probably didn't dig deep into his bag. Right? You don't show everything you got.
That's true, especially when you have that matchup coming. Yeah,
for sure. It matters. But at the same time, I know they probably held a little something back. But I'm not going to give them I'm not going to let them off the hook. Like, they had the full complement of guys. You can see they were trying early. And then they might have kind of waved the white flag early in the third and just said, okay, we're not going to win this game. Let's go. But the point is, Boston got up 20-something before they kind of, you know, folded. Celtics aren't scared of Toronto. Jaylen Brown's not scared of Siakam. And that's where, as we were talking earlier, having the best player in the series matters. Siakam's really good. He's not markedly better than Jason Tatum. He's not markedly better than Jaylen Brown. And the fact that physically Boston has so many like-sized defenders – we just switched everything on the perimeter, we being Boston, and you can see it stymied Toronto. Toronto's like, well, what do we do right now? You know, you would think Marc Gasol can go in and punish a guy like Daniel Theis. Marc Gasol's not that kind of guy. So, yeah, having the best player in the series matters, but Siakam's not better than Tatum. I think Tatum, but, you know, it's arguable. They're about the same level of player. We know Tatum's better. Jaylen Brown actually showed that he's right there on par with Siakam too. He's not scared of him. Defensively, he's big enough, strong enough to absorb his strength. He's not falling for the spin move. So, yeah, I think Boston's not scared of Toronto in that matchup. Marc Gasol is not going to punish Daniel Theis in the post, because that's not who he is.
He's more of a face-up guy, especially at this point.
Especially at this point, and if he decides to, then guess what? You might have a role for Enes Kanter, because he can come in and just play Marc Gasol. You know, so, yeah, man, it's I don't know how much that game meant, but it meant something. Boston showed that when all they're clicking, they're not scared of Toronto.
Boston got a good path. Philly, I see a ton of skepticism of Philly coming into this, and I can't blame them now that Embiid's hobbled. When Simmons went down, it's like, all right, maybe they can make some things work with Embiid. Steven said today that, you know, they're the best offense without Simmons this year, which I guess is statistically true, but you got a full speed Embiid in those cases, and he's hobbled by the ankle now. And then you run into a Toronto or, you know, Lord willing, Brooklyn round two. They got a good path. And now Milwaukee's going to have to go through Miami or Indiana, who are both looking like formidable opponents right now. That's going to be a grueling first round matchup there in the 4-5, as it should be. So Boston got rewarded to some degree for their great regular season and finishing 6-4 in the final 10 here. Kemba came back better than anybody imagined. I thought he had a great close to the regular season. Hayward looks in shape. And suddenly this team that was battered all year, missing one of their key guys pretty much since opening night, is 100% healthy and got some bench contributions too. If there's any sneaky team in the East, and of course this is coming from me, the Celtics guy, it's them.
No, I don't think it's even sneaky, right? There's a few pundits.
You got them legit contenders.
I mean, let's be real. Other than Milwaukee, right? Giannis is a monster. That offense is a monster. But Toronto right now is just talk of the league. But Boston, like, it's right there with them. You got four guys who can give you legit 20 any night. You got Danny Tice is a strong, sneaky defensive center, right? Perfect for that team. My only concern with Boston is the bench, because I know Marcus Smart came off the bench, but he's basically the sixth starter. The Boston has to get contributions from somebody else besides Marcus Smart. Right. And we saw Shammy can hit threes. We saw, bits and pieces. But the bench is the shaky part with Boston. And that's going to be telling. Because Toronto's really deep. The Bucks are really deep. They got two or three guys going off the bench who really can impact the game. So, but I mean, Boston's right there. The net ratings show it. Boston had big wins against the best teams. My one concern is, just a little bit. The ghost of last season is still kind of hanging over. Boston should handle Philly pretty easily, but Embiid is a monster. And, let's see how the playoff pressure comes. Let's see how everybody performs.
I'm interested to see playoff Al Horford. And it feels like Horford's been in Philly forever,
but he hasn't even gotten to the playoffs with them yet. This has all been one big year. So that, he's going to be the X factor for them if he can fit in better with Embiid than Simmons did. I want to get to the West because honestly, the East, it's the East. It's been the East for a couple of years. This West is insane. Where do I even start? I think I'm going to start with that 2-7 matchup. It's a rough one for the Clippers, but this is the Western Conference now. You get the Dallas Mavericks, who asserted themselves as one of the all-time great offenses this year. And it sounded stupid during the season, but now that you put them in this environment and see them on national TV and get what Luka is cooking up every night, and this is another guy, one season to the next. He was one thing during the year. This Luka looks like an MVP candidate as we go into next season. The performance he had to close Milwaukee was insane when you consider what the Bucks have been this year. And I haven't seen a ton of them and the Clippers matching up, but it looks like they do some things that could seriously challenge the Clippers, especially where the Clippers haven't gotten their rotations together. They're still that team that has some injuries here or there, and then you're still trying to integrate Marcus Morris. This was my pick preseason to win the championship, but I hear everything the doubters in them are saying, and it's all legitimate. They don't seem to know exactly who they are in terms of a five-man lineup to close a game, and they got the toughest first-round opponent for a seven seed that I think you could possibly imagine.
I'm still pretty confident in the Clippers because, again, in that series, like, I get it. Luka's amazing. Luka's way better than I thought he'd ever be. Kawhi Leonard's still Kawhi Leonard. We saw what he did last playoff.
Paul George was great, too, in this bubble.
So the fact that you can throw – Marcus Morris, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George at Luka, and you don't really have anyone. Dorian Finney-Smith is a strong defender, but yeah, he's like the only perimeter, real defensive guy that really, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. is not a great defender, but he's all right. But yeah, I just looking at those two matchups, while the Dallas offense is great, the defense hasn't been great, and the Clippers offense has been pretty good, and defense can be, has the potential to be great. I just think the Clippers are going to just overwhelm them with talent, right? Lou will miss a lot of games this bubble time.
We haven't seen
Montrezl Harrell yet. He's going to come back. He's had the whole season, so he might, it take him a game or two in the playoffs to kind of settle back in, but he's going to be fine. So, I think the Clippers are just head and shoulders better than the Mavericks. And if they had their boy, was it Maxi Kleber?
Yep.
If they had Maxi Kleber, I'd give him a puncher's chance.
Dwight Powell, rather. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Kleber's still there. Sorry. Dwight Powell. This is a great podcast.
We're all getting there. Yeah.
This is my summer league.
That's on me with the writing. Yeah, for real.
Yeah, I think if they had Dwight Powell, cool. But Dwight Powell, that their depth inside is gone, and I think it's going to be a good contest. Maybe Dallas steals one. If they steal two, then more respect for Luka and Porzingis. I just feel like Porzingis, this is going to be his first playoffs. And he has a soft label, but for a reason. So I think that the Clippers are going to be physical with him. He's not going to post up, So we'll see.
That brings us to our all-bubble team. And Porzingis is a guy. I didn't put him on there, but 30.5 points per game. Shot 38 from three.
He averaged 30 a game?
Yeah, in the six games. Still got another game or so to go here, but this was what Dallas was doing in the bubble the other night. I think this was the Milwaukee game. Luka goes 36, 19, and 13, I think it was. An absurd line. Like, you'd be hard-pressed to get that from LeBron on some nights in his prime. And so all of a sudden, you have Porzingis alongside him, matching him at the 30-point mark every night. Like, this team is absurd on offense. Finney-Smith can give you seven threes, as he did in that game. Like, this was a team that scored 140, 150 in that meeting with Houston during the year, and it feels like they can give you that any given night. So the Clippers, it's a Doc Rivers defense. They're stingy. They got the personnel. But this team, it's hard to comprehend it, right? Because they've been rebuilding. Luka's still fairly new. The cast isn't great, but this is really one of the greatest offenses in NBA history.
I get it. I know that per offensive rating, we're saying that. All right, we'll leave it at that. Yes, they're a great
defense,
offense.
You need defense.
I also know that they've been one of the worst teams in the clutch time.
In the crunch time, yep.
And that has to matter, because if a game is tight at the end, if you can't pull it out, if you perform poorly in the clutch time, then what are you doing? And the playoffs are they're not going to let. That's a big time of the playoffs, right? Because we know in the regular season, you play a different one every night. Some games, guys just don't come into it with their minds in. Playoffs, everyone's locked in. You see the same defense every night, so they know your tendencies. They start learning your counters and your second counters. So by game four, they know everything you're trying to do. And that's when we're going to see what the Mavs are really made of.
That's true. First playoff run for Luka Doncic. A lot of these guys, they're fast risers. De'Aaron Fox, I left him off the list. He averaged 26. Gary Trent could be going to the playoffs, but that's a guy who started drilling a ton of threes during this restart. Offensive fire force. Second round pick, I think, too. So he emerged late, at least late first rounder for him. So he's been one of the guys I've had my eyes on in this bubble. Melo. Big threes, big shots at the end of these games, averaging 16, I believe, in this bubble. Didn't expect that. I mean, I'm not filling out the Melo apology form that you see floating around Twitter, but that's another guy. I think he's probably honorable mention all bubble. I'll throw Nurkic in there.
Nurkic's been great.
Yeah.
Nurkic's been great.
Another guy who changed his team. 30 points against the Celtics, just dominated them in there when I saw that game. The last one I got on honorable mention, Bol Bol. Good. Two-way guy. Probably one of the more intriguing guys we've seen in the history of this two-way deal. I was skeptical coming in. The first game when everyone went crazy and with all the blocks and stuff and that scrimmage, I was like, all right, like the defense isn't great. It's just the flashiness. But now that he's shown to be a legitimate bench rotation guy on that Denver team that's already pretty deep, I'm intrigued. He's hitting threes. He's making plays defensively, even though he's not fundamentally sound there yet. There's a ton of upside with this guy, and they got him for a steal now that you look back on it.
Yeah, I mean, him and his buddy Porter Jr., you know what I mean? Those are two great picks, and Denver did a good job developing those two young guys. Again, we got to see how it looks in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right? It's one thing to have a guy come in and really kind of surprise people because they don't know what to expect from him. But once teams get a film on him and they say, okay, this is our game plan, it's a different story. I'm not saying they're going to, you know, Porter Jr. and him are going to have struggles, but it's just different in the playoffs. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. This has been a very eye-opening play for Bol Bol, for Michael Porter Jr. I'm not a big Denver Nuggets fan. Let's see how they look. Is Gary Harris going to come back? That's a question.
I wasn't thrilled about them either. But these guys shook up things, especially Porter on the wing, right? Because they had a Gary Harris, they had a Will Barton, sort of like a three-guard.
Undersized yeah. Small guard, yeah. Now they got this giant on the wing who can shoot over the top of guys, you know.
It puts everything together, yeah. And so he was 9 points per game all year. The jump was just ridiculous. He obviously highlighted my all-bubble team, got Luka on there, Lillard, no-brainer. Lillard's stat line was – I got to read it. Ridiculous. 37 a game, couple 60-point games, 48% from the field. When you think of the shots he's taken, that's absurd. 41% from three on 12 attempts.
That's crazy.
This is
– So there's going to be a very real discussion. And nine assists on top. Very real discussion next season. Best point guard in the league because we haven't seen Steph Curry all year last year. We know he's the man. They're going to come back with Dre and Clay's going to be healthy. But Dame has shown that he's in the conversation for the best point guard in the league. He has to be in that conversation.
He's been there, honestly.
Let's be real. It's been Steph and everyone else, right? Steph and who's number two?
So you're talking going forward.
I'm saying going forward, Dame is like starting next season. You can't just say Steph's best point guard in the league because he missed a whole season. He has to kind of prove himself again. And then what Dame did all this season. Even if they don't make the playoffs, we saw what he's capable of. If you ask my ranking coming into 2021 season, Dame and then whoever else, Steph has to prove himself.
That's interesting because I brought a top 25 list coming out of the season here, and Lillard just obviously factored into it, got him at 7. I think he's right there with the elite of the league. So we're talking Kawhi.
How about point guards? Who do you got him at?
He's number one, and I didn't even notice that. I didn't even like take that away, and you're right. So Steph's missing, and we got Durant missing. Like these are going to be interesting guys when they come back in, where they reestablish themselves in the hierarchy. I didn't even put the injured guys on there. Kyrie too. That's another factor in there. So when those guys come back, it'll be interesting to see where they place themselves, especially Kyrie in that point guard conversation. But Lillard is in a class of his own. I'm trying to see who's even number two. You got Trae Young. You got Chris Paul. You got Russell Westbrook. So maybe
Russ had the numbers. Russ's numbers look great. He really impacted Houston, but, you know, Russ is Russ, very inefficient, doesn't play defense. I could see Chris Paul has been incredible. I could say, and I'm a Chris Paul hater. I can't take it away from him.
He did this year was ridiculous, and he'll be one of the more sought after guys this year if he's available this summer. People are laughing at the whole Knicks thing. I feel like if he does what he did this year with the Thunder, and that's obviously a better cast, better organization, better coach, all that. If he does that in the Knicks situation, might not be the best, you know, way to spend their money, way to spend their assets, but it just feels like it'll put them on the right track. A professional, a guy who probably has a year or two left of great play, just get with the young guys and put everything.
It sounds good, man. I just worry so much that the Knicks just have a couple decades worth of just terrible decision making, bad karma, everything behind them. Can Chris Paul overcome that? Right.
We can see a play out now. He has this huge year. They trade him. They give up a ton to get him, and then he just goes down the drain. And he's got like 2 or 3 years left on his contract.
I'll say his numbers might look just the same, but like that whole Knicks organization is just so dysfunctional. It's like it's down to the bones of that Knicks franchise, you know? So I don't know, man. I don't know.
So I'm going to get to that hierarchy in a minute. I do want to throw this team out there. Luka, this was easy, honestly. They put this all bubble team together, and it did fit together fairly easily for me. There was no one I left off that was hard here. It was Luka, Porter, Lillard, and then the two left we haven't got to.
You said Porter's one of your guys?
Yep. 26 a game. Top 10 in scoring, I believe, in the stretch out there. I thought he gave Denver a new element. So he actually ends 22, dipped a little bit the last few games, 8 rebounds, good shooting splits, 55, 42, 93. Huge bump. I mean, he was the number one bump, 9 points a game to 22. That's what did it for me. And then we got our TJ Warren and our Devin Booker. Did those guys change their opinions on your end?
No, I've always been high on Devin Booker. And it's funny, though, I know a lot of people who, oh, Devin Booker's just a big-time scorer on a bad team.
That was me.
And so, yeah, and you know what? I don't think he changed. I think the guys around him changed. They actually got him. Look, you put two wings around him that can switch and play power forward or small forward. You know, Ricky Rubio's healthy, and then Ayton's on the floor, and Ayton's been playing so much better. And now they look like a functional team. I think Booker's the same guy he's been for the last maybe 2 years. Is the fact that the team around him has been elevated, and he helped elevate them. So that's – he didn't change my opinion. TJ Warren, I think, was a flash in the pan. We saw he had, 16. You know, he went, 5 for 16 against the Heat. And, you know, it is what it is. He's an explosive scorer who had a nice little, you know, 3 or 4-game stretch. I still don't believe in TJ Warren as a game changer. There's a reason that he's on, you know, a pretty reasonably small contract, and a reason he was, like, you know, he's a backup guy or part-time starter. He's good. He's a great bucket-getter. So, yeah, it was nice. It was a fun little run from TJ Warren, but I'm not the biggest TJ Warren fan.
He fit what it was weird, and he was a guy who was playing with Booker down there in Phoenix when they couldn't get together. They traded him for nothing, and they both averaged 31 in this bubble. Warren was insane to me. Booker, I respected. I agree with you generally that he didn't have the supporting cast, didn't have the system. It feels like he has the coach now, too. Monty Williams is good, and he set a good standard down there. I felt like he brought that group into the bubble with the right mindset, too, which was important. You saw the good coaches stand out in this bubble and the way they brought their teams together. So Booker, my eyes are on them. Mikal Bridges, we already mentioned him. DeAndre Ayton looks like the right center for that team. If he can stay off the suspension list, then they'll be fine. Injuries with him, too, could be a concern. They missed on Luka, ultimately, but it's going to be – I think our Jared Weiss compared it to the 84 draft there with Jordan and Olajuwon. Like, would the Rockets have wanted Jordan? Hell yeah. But they got Olajuwon, they got a couple titles, and they're happy with that.
I'm not going to do that because
– No, it's too far on that. It's too far
with Ayton. I like Ayton, but the gap between him – And Luka is way bigger than the gap between Jordan and Olajuwon.
And then who fits right in between there? It was Portland and Bowie, right? That's where Marvin Bagley's headed.
So it was really disappointing to see the Pelicans come to the bubble and just play such uninspired basketball. That was kind of sad to see. Like, you know, they actually look. Let's be real. The league wanted Zion to get to at least the play-in, right? They wanted them to. right? And the fact that Zion, you know, he went home. There's rumors that, like, I don't know, man. It's just such a strange situation in New Orleans.
We never found out why he went home, huh?
Well, you know, it was a family thing. And then, like, he comes back and looks really out of shape, which, you know, that's he was home for, like, you know, a week or whatever, 10 days. He comes back and looks really out of shape.
It all looked bad at that Utah game when they had to hold him out late. They blow the lead, and then you go, uh-oh, this is going to come back to hit them. And it wasn't even close in the end.
Lonzo Ball, he just looked very uninterested in his reports now that he was checked out. Just uninspired is a good word, how New Orleans looked when they came back. They looked they didn't want to be there. And that's really disconcerting, right? They had a chance to sneak into the playoffs. And they just laid down. So
Alvin Gentry's been there for a minute. He was with that first Warriors championship team. Don't doubt he's a good coach, but it hasn't worked there for him. He went through the AD stuff, couldn't get that team together. Now he's got a very able team here. JJ Redick added to the fold. They weren't world beaters. They should have been more than a 30-win team this year, though, even with the Zion injury. And that hurt. They had to integrate him. His shape wasn't amazing all year. And frankly, let's just say it, the whole NBA world anointed him too quick. He comes out here 16 points a game, you know, good for a rookie, but the 60% free throw, the lack of three-point shooting in this bubble, and all the turnovers. People were trying to hype him up for Rookie of the Year, and he wasn't even close this year.
I'm fine with annoying him because the physical, as far as, all right, I understand why people annoy him. The physical tools are there. When he is engaged and he can stay on the court for more than 15 minutes, he's a game changer. The fun, we haven't seen an extended stretch of both of those things happening. And that's where it's kind of concerning. And I get it. They're going to take it very, very cautiously with him. You know, people complained about why they held him at the end of that one game, you know, playing him so sparingly. And I get it. But if you're going to play him 15 minutes, play him 25. You know, that's my thing. But we also saw he was literally gassed. A couple of games, he was walking on the court and they had to pull him out. And that's another concerning sign for me. So does Sky have potential is why people are excited about him. But then the reality hasn't caught up yet.
Yeah, you worry about the guy playing it his way too. I hate to do that, but when he's had the injuries that he's suffered now early in his career in year one, that's going to be something people talk about and legitimately so. Now, I'm not doing the whole Barkley thing.
It's troubling when a guy reality. Of his size and his physicality, a player of his size and physicality has to be kept under bubble wrap for a whole season. It's troubling. It's
for sure. Troubling. Guy who's fully developed too, size-wise and all that. There's something there. The organization's not great. Will he get the right coach? Will he get the right – there's a lot of questions there going forward, and they just weren't ready for it this year, so they had the result that they deserved ultimately. So he's one of my duds. Ja Morant and the Grizzlies, they went 1-6. Cast around and fell apart.
Were they 1-6? No.
Yep. I mean, that's not everybody else got into the fold.
No, they won today, didn't they?
Oh, so this is including today, but coming in today, 1-6, they saved themselves today. There you go.
So that we got. Are you gonna give them a little bit of leeway? Because
a little bit. I think they pulled the
big man got injured. The big man got injured.
Yep, Jaren Jackson, and they pulled the rug out of them with that trade. I thought Solomon Hill not a huge part there, but I thought Jay Crowder was a ginormous part of that team's great start. Pull him out of there, and it's one of those guys who Jacques could kick out to. And then they get the guy back from Miami there, Justice Winslow, and he didn't even factor in, got banged up again. So, you know, they're starting something nice there. It's going to be tough for them going forward in the West with some of the other rising teams out there. But they had a hell of an offseason when you get Morant and Brandon Clark in that draft. So the future's bright there. They got a good coach. They transitioned fast from that Gasol and Conley era. I just don't think they have much left in the tank here. And Ja wasn't amazing to me in this stretch here. And this season is over. Some teams got done earlier than others. It was nice to see the Cavaliers and some of those guys out of there, frankly, because those teams are hard. At the bottom of the league this year, you had some awful teams. Even though the parity was up, those teams were unwatchable. So
Charlotte stomp,
I mean, Wizards, we already got into that.
They should not have been the bubble. Shout out to my boy Jaylen Brown, because I love Jaylen Brown. He's been shooting lights out, with the exception of that last game where he was terrible.
Should we put him on honorable mention too? Yeah, for sure.
Him and Tatum are mine. I don't know why you were a traitor. You didn't put him and Tatum on, but, you know.
I guess it's because I kind of expected it at this point. It wasn't a big bump for me.
Gordon Hayward was incredible too. He was incredible this bubble.
Yeah, I guess I put this list together kind of thinking of a bump. in scoring and all that kind of stuff that some of these guys saw. It was interesting. We talk about the new season. We talk about the environment. And you already said it too. Guys came back in phenomenal shape, probably better shape than you were in an off season, because guys will go play in the Olympics or overseas, or they'll just be playing in general. So they were able
to be traveling. You know what? Guys be traveling the world, like, vacationing, and you couldn't do that right now. So they were home just working. They were in the lab.
So that's why some of these guys saw a massive bump that we wouldn't have expected. So those are my bumps there. I want to reset the stage of the league's hierarchy here a little bit. And, you know, we both can't throw our top 25 list out there, but I'm going to run up mine and we'll kind of adjust it as you see fit here. So I'll start with some honorable mentions. These guys, especially this year, vaulted themselves into the conversation for top 25. So I'll run through these quick. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, already I'm putting him there. What he did with the Thunder, what he did alongside Chris Paul, the year that they had when they were expected to be maybe last in the West, said a lot to me, and I think he's going to be the face of that team going forward. Brandon Ingram, who's in the most improved conversation, deservedly so, fell off a little bit late, but he had a vault. These guys aren't new, but Sabonis, Towns, they should probably be a little higher at this point in their careers, but they're still floating on that borderline territory. And then, you know, you mentioned Vucevic. I'll throw Gobert in there. And Devin Booker.
I don't know about Sabonis, man. Sabonis, I don't know. But go ahead. All right.
Those are my honorable mentions. I'm gonna pull up the Sabonis line quick because his stats will surprise you. And that.
No, he's fine. Sabonis is fine. But again, you got a power forward who doesn't really shoot threes and doesn't protect the rim. He's fine. He's fine where he's at. Where, you know, Oladipo and guys to set him up, and he's probably, you know, maybe second, third best part of that team, but I don't know about top 25.
12 boards per game, not doing it for you?
And what? Give me the rest of the numbers.
We got 18 points a game. You're right. The threes aren't there, 25%. And it was in Oklahoma City, which is strange to me, but it wasn't a representation of who he was. And I knew that in college, too, because he didn't shoot the three ball particularly well there either. 54% from the field, 5 assists, too. He's
not
a good
strong
passer.
Defender.
Defense.
5 assists a game?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's 5. 5 assists a game.
Mm-hmm. He's a great passer. So it works in Indiana because he's next to Miles Turner, right? Rim protector.
Yeah.
You have a two-big system, which is different in the league today, but it works for them. How do you feel about Indiana? We didn't get into them, but they've been in that middle area for a while, and this is a representation of who he is to some degree, and Oladipo, and just their whole cast there. They're middle.
Oladipo hasn't looked extremely healthy, and it looks like he's struggling to get himself back into the, you know, the all-star Oladipo shape. So it happens. He had a pretty major injury. I've been impressed. I thought they'd fall off a little more than they have. You know, the guys, next man up, T.J. Warren showed out. You know, the Holiday brothers are playing well. So I'm impressed with them. They've been better than I thought they'd be. I thought they would definitely be kind of like not a threat, but like look at them compared to a team like Philly right now. Right now they're at least as good as Philly, you know, without Embiid, without Simmons. Just get hot
this year.
Yeah, they just get hot in the right 4 or 5 games, then they could, you know, they could take almost any team, I think, except for maybe Milwaukee, you know. So it's a credit to their front office and their culture that they're as good as they are.
People love these less snotty. This is going to get some views. Let's get into this. So number 25, this guy's a phenomenal defender. We talked about New Orleans. He's a big reason that they were as competitive they were at their best this year. Jrue Holiday is a low-key top 25 player in this league. He brings it offensively, on the ball, off the ball. The guy's been around for a minute. We look back on his time with Philly in the movie there when the Sixers and the Celtics were facing off, Uncut Gems. He was on that team in his youth, and now he's a veteran who's put it all together. It's took him a little while, but 25 or no? Top 25 or no?
I tweeted this the other day that he's one of those teams, borderline all-star, whatever, former all-star, that he's not a superstar, but you swap him and, say, Kemba. You swap him and Goran Dragic and make him a starter down there in Miami. And that team's a contender.
Changes the game.
Kemba is probably better than him, quote unquote better, but his defense and his savvy and like his unselfishness, it's different. So I definitely say he's 25.
$26 million a year. So that's
the price tag is steep. absolutely, but he's a very good player.
I was interested in what he's wrapped up until 2022. So they got a guy there. I mean, that works for New Orleans and their outlook there. So all looks good there. He's probably not moving. 24 already. We mentioned him. We didn't get deep into him, but I think Ja Morant, considering what he flashed this year, considering what he did with the Grizzlies, it's tough to put a rookie up there this early, and he is the only young guy that I put in this category here. But he proved it to me this year, the explosion, the playmaking, and just being the guy on a playoff team. And Snotty, I see the face you're making, but this is the West, and they were the definitive. If you didn't do any of the stuff here, if they didn't have the bubble and the play-in tournament and all that, and in fact, I think if you just played out the last 20 games of the season, the Grizzlies would have had it on their own, and that's impressive in the West.
He is a dynamic talent. I think he's right up there as far as the most athletic guards in the league. But I don't know, man. Just he has a great feel for the game, but the shooting's not there. The defense isn't really there. I don't know. I'm hard-pressed to put him in the top 25, but I'm not going to argue too much about it.
Here's my Celtics love, and you're going to get it on this list. Didn't have Jaylen Brown in this. I guess I'll put Brown in my honorable mentions too, now that I look at it, because he's defensively, offensively, he's great. I'm glad you mentioned him. 23, though, still better than Brown at this point for me, and especially considering the comeback year he had this year. Gordon Hayward. This guy has gotten so much crap, especially from Celtics fans over the last couple of years. He shoots the mid-range. He finishes. He hits threes. He plays on the ball, off the ball. And this year, if you look at the numbers, he wasn't 50-40-90, but he was probably 50-38-85. So numbers close to approaching the last year in Utah when he made the All-Star game. And you see him against Memphis throwing down that big dunk, finishing through Bam Adebayo. He was great this year, 18 points a game. They made a big fuss this year about the Celtics being the first team since 84, I believe it was, with three 20-point-per-game scorers. They pretty much had four, and that's unheard of.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you there. I'm biased too. I'm a Celtics fan, but like Gordon Hayward has shown he's willing to step back and let guys do their thing, but he also, like we saw in the bubble especially, he was more aggressive. He looks really healthy, you know, almost comparable, like you said, to his Utah days. And his per 36 numbers are very close to that Utah All-Star year. So he stepped back, but he's still super efficient. He's still really smart, strong passer. He can play power forward. Like, yeah, that guy, he's a good player. He's a really good player.
I believe he had 8 rebounds a game in the bubble too, which was impressive. He came back ready to roll. That Celtics team is legit championship material. And if people aren't on it yet, they got to get on it quick. Siakam, we got into him a bit. Champion, all-star, most improved candidate. Struggled a bit here, but honestly, this guy's going to be one of the faces of the league, face of that team going forward. I think this one's easy.
Sure. I'm fine with this. He started off the season gangbusters. He was great like the first couple weeks, first couple months. He tailed off a lot. Like, not a lot, but he tailed off and became, again, he was more Jaylen Brown than Jason Tatum for like the second half of the season, which is not an insult because Jaylen Brown is great, but he was almost like, you know, the 3-point shooting fell off. And so he's good. He's really good.
I'm interested, and that's going to be two names that get tossed around a lot for a long time, Tatum and Siakam. They're going to guard each other. They're going to both be contenders in the East for the foreseeable future, probably. That's going to be a battle to watch there.
Yeah, he definitely, but a lot of people will tell you that Kyle Lowry is the best Raptor right now, not Siakam. So.
Did I have Lowry on here? No. Probably another guy worthy of honorable mention. Great point guard, still at this point in his career, and he drives that team a lot of nights, you're right. So if I have Siakam on here, Lowry's going to be honorable mention. Here's another point guard, though, that I think is better than Lowry, still better than Morant, and still among the best in the league this year, he proved it. Took a step back in his role, another Celtic, Kemba Walker. The knees, that whole contract there in Boston, it's going to be about the knees, and that could dictate whether they're a championship contender or a guy with a $30 million contract dragging behind them for the next couple of years. So that worries me. But this year, explosive when he needed to be. He had that 40-point game against the Bucks. You know, other nights, he's just letting Tatum and Brown run the show. The anti-Kyrie Irving in so many different ways. He doesn't want to embrace that, but you know, it's pretty much what the difference between last season and this season was. And he was phenomenal. Still a top 25 player to me.
So I love Kemba. I love what he brings offensively. I love his leadership. He he's not better than Kyle Lowry. For the simple fact that the defense.
Yeah.
Kemba is actually a liability. Teams target him in the pick and roll. They want to switch him. And sure, people can try that with Kyle Lowry, but Kyle Lowry's a fire plug. He's not quite Marcus Smart strong, but he's strong. And you're not going to just post him up. Bigger guards or small forwards aren't going to just say, oh, I want to post Kyle Lowry up. It's not going to happen.
We gotta I love that conversation too. Yeah, because
we all know about his famous butt. So he's really strong. he has a strong lower body. And that makes a difference. And, you know, he takes the charges. He has really strong hands. Wow. So, yeah, he's like Marcus Light. He's Marcus Smart Light on defense. And that makes a difference.
Who is a more famous butt, him or Yabusele?
it's definitely him. Like, so I love Kemba offensively. If you say, hey, we need somebody to go give me a bucket, you're right. I go Kemba all day. If you're saying a starting guard on a championship-level team and you can't target him on defense, it's hard, man. Kyle Lowry, he's good. I don't even like him, but he's good.
Lowry is – he's a divisive player. Some people love him. Some people hate him. You can tell I'm more neutral on him. Like, I hear everything you're saying. It's close between him and Walker. I hear the defense, too. I think the Celtics are 7 points better offensively with him on the floor per 100, and then it's 4 points towards Smart in those Smart minutes. So they're lucky they have both those guys to interchange at that point guard spot. What I loved about Kemba, too, this year, when he pops around that screen – he's like 43% on the spot of jumping around the screen. Like, he has become a lethal three-point shooter, and that is everything to him right now. He barely takes shots in between anymore, which, you know, that's the Celtics.
My one worry about Kemba is that since the knees and like
the burst, said, yes.
Well, he has this thing where he's going to the rim, and he dribbles one dribble too much. So he's trying to go up, take his two steps, he's gathering, and he's launching himself from under the rim. So the rim itself is a defender, and, like, he's pinning himself under the rim and getting blocked a lot. I hate to see that.
I got to look at his numbers at the rim, especially in this bubble. He's been poor in there, and he gets swallowed up. He's small.
He gets swallowed up. He doesn't take off from far enough back. He's not beating guys, exploding by him. They're riding him to the rim and just swatting his shot. So
credit to the Celtics, though, because if he was a lost cause here, and, like, it was looking coming in, it would have completely transformed their outlook. Though that is something people have to consider when you think of their expectations this year, because this might be the last elite year of Walker left. Can he still be good from here? Certainly, especially the way he plays. But you look at the contract he has and the length, it's a little worrisome.
If he can settle into a 17, 18-point game score besides Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and, you know, not be a nightmare defensively, you take what you can get. So, all right, next player.
Bam Adebayo. I'm looking. He's not number one center, but he's top three. And you could probably make an argument between him and Embiid already just because of the way Embiid has gone. Bam has completely transformed the Heat. We didn't talk about Miami. They're sneaky contenders. They play the Bucks well. They have a tough path where the Celtics don't, which is going to make it difficult on them. They got to beat Indiana, then Milwaukee, and then play the East Finals. But this guy, he can handle it. The three needs to come along a little bit if we're talking about him as this transcendent player. They've cast him a little bit too far as a three-point shooter. He hit some, but he's not a three-point shooter yet. He's a slasher. He's a defensive force. And maybe – you know, Kevin O'Connor and Zach Lowe and others have talked about this. The antidote to Giannis in the East, if there is one, he's the closest thing. So this guy defensively, attitude-wise too, I love his personality. I love the leadership he's already flashing there. And it's so interesting to me because he wasn't a great college player. In fact, he probably underperformed in college. And, you know, the Heat got him for a steal there.
Wrong. I think playing for, what's his name? Calipari,
yeah.
We've seen Anthony Davis, same thing. College was just, you really can't score.
He won a championship.
Yeah, but still, did you think he'd be a 30-point per game score?
No.
Playing for Calipari seriously kind of reels, I don't know, whatever. Bam is I think just the fact that he's almost like, he's like the connective tissue down there. He looked great against the Celtics, right? He was getting his big man on against the Celtics, and he's a 6'9 center. Sure, you would love, like, ideally you want to be a 3-point shooter, but I think he impacts the game so much defensively, he doesn't have to be. I can agree he's top 25.
So here's a fun one. 19.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to say, you're saying that it's a conversation with him and Embiid. It's not a conversation. Embiid's, yeah.
And you'll see Embiid's a step above still. I think it's becoming one, though, especially as Embiid feels like he's hitting a wall as a player, but we'll get to him in a minute. Simmons, his teammate, deserves ranking here.
Yeah.
We give him crap. Deservedly so. I mean, the whole – here's my thing. So the three-pointer, fans got in his head with it, and this is the social media era where he can see that stuff. I think it pisses him off. And it's a back and forth thing in his head. And we know it is because he saw the sports psychologist and all that. And it's a, you know, back and forth thing between him and Brett Brown. This is just one of 15 things that are wrong with the 76ers. And there's probably more. But throw that to the side. Defensively, probably top five. Versatility, he can play off ball as a roller and on the ball as an elite playmaker. And the guy puts up ridiculous scoring numbers as just a downhill driver, and probably, you know, him or Giannis, take your pick, best transition player in the sport. And that's what made the 76ers.
No, don't take your pick, Giannis. Stop that.
All right, so this is my thing. He could become a Giannis-esque player.
No, he can't, because Giannis has a ridiculous length. Round is like 7'2 almost, and he has this ridiculously giant hand. It's just different. No, let's not do that.
I got to actually pull up the numbers, but I feel like on any given night, this guy can give you 24, 9, and probably 8 rebounds. So I think he's the guy that Philadelphia has to place their bets on going forward. It's got to be him or Embiid. We'll get to Embiid in a second, but I think this guy has so much more potential than he's flashing. I've given him the crap for the downsides to his game, and I think he's limited himself mentally, which, you know, is a thing. We don't talk about the mental side of these sports very often, but it's something he has to overcome, and it's something he's addressing. Simmons, I think 19's fair. You have some problems with the upside I'm talking about here, but this guy's...
Yeah, because I think with like basketball is one of those sports that, sure, you could say he's 90% of Giannis, but that extra 10% is what makes Giannis Giannis. Mm-hmm. So that he just does not have the giant hands. He doesn't have the ability to take two steps from half court and dunk. It's just Giannis is like superhuman, and Ben Simmons is like a really good human. It's just it's that little bit of difference separates the superstars from the stars, and that's what Giannis is a superstar.
Well, let me pull in Embiid. So Embiid's 10 on my list. We're skipping ahead with him, but this matters because I feel like those guys could interchange themselves if they weren't getting in each other's way so much. They don't complement each other at all. In fact, I'm sure they're probably the least complimented superstar duo or borderline superstar duo that we've ever seen in basketball. Like, these guys just do not mesh personality, play. It doesn't work. And they seem resistant to moving on from one of them, even though they could get a lot for either of them. And they're just trying to dance around the fact that they have the most oddly constructed good team I've ever seen. So Embiid, injuries, missed the first 2 years of his career. He's made it work since then. He's hurt again. Shape, always a question. The three-pointer comes and goes. And then just always the, you know, personality. It's endearing, but does it annoy other people in the room? The guy is so talented, and we saw it in the first five games here. He put up 30, 40 points like it was nothing and just carried the team through those first five games in the bubble. But then he's hurt again. Which of those guys you're rolling with forward if you're them? I mean, Embiid's better right now, but do you get rid of him and try to build around Simmons?
I think in a vacuum, he's better than Simmons no matter what. But injuries are a real thing. He hasn't, you know, he's not going to play. Is he ever going to play a full season? Is he ever going to play 75 games? We don't know. It's always something with him. And that's where Philly kind of painted themselves in this corner, right? They bet on these two supremely talented players. I think Embiid is the more talented player, the better player, the more potential to be a franchise changer. But the injuries. For me, with Simmons, you can't just disregard the fact that his coach and his team are begging him to shoot. Begging him. And he refuses to do it. That matters to me. And that's why, as talented as I think he is, we've seen, like, and a lot of times, both of these are those players, Simmons and Embiid, they just seem really disinterested sometimes. You know? They came to this season. It's funny because I love Al Horford. Al was great in Boston. But now he went to another team. And it's obviously not his fault. But Philly had all the accolades in the preseason, all the accolades offseason, and they severely underperformed. And it's not his fault. They did a poor job building around Embiid and Simmons. But eventually, no matter what you want to say about the roster construction, when you have two quote-unquote superstars like Embiid and Simmons, and they underperform, you've got to start pointing the fingers. So So Simmons is great, and Embiid is great for different reasons. Like you said, they don't mesh very well. And yeah, it's as a Boston fan, I love to see it. As an NBA fan, I hate to see it because I want to see these guys kind of reach their full potential and they're not doing it.
To get us along here, I'm going to start grouping some guys together and we can kind of weigh them, especially because
let's go quicker. Yeah.
It's closer here. We got 18 Mitchell, Donovan Mitchell, 17 Russell Westbrook, 16 Chris Paul. And, you know, I'll probably put Chris Paul above Trae Young at this point. But Trae Young had a, you know, close to 30 point per game season this year. He's become an offensive firehouse. Rank those four.
Also is the worst defensive guard in the league. I wouldn't even have Mitchell in their class. I love Donovan Mitchell's scoring potential, but he also right now has a lot of prime Jamal Crawford to his game. When he scores, he's going to score at a.
They need that on that team, though. It fits.
They do, but again, he might give them 30 and they lose. Give them 30 and they win. A lot of times he's just kind of scoring in the phone booth. And I get it. He has some nice moments and highlight moments. But yes, I don't put him in the same class as the Chris Paul as even Russell Westbrook right now. That's just, I think he should be lower than Ben Simmons. He should be lower than, I don't know, who do you have?
We had Bam, Walker, Siakam.
Maybe kind of like a Kemba Walker level. I don't think he should be as far as higher than them. So he's definitely at the lower end of that ranking. I'd say it's funny because Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul, you go between raw production and maybe impact. And honestly, I, as much as I love Russ, Chris Paul is probably the better player right now.
All right, next four. This is our grouping right below the top 10. So we're not at elite category yet, but these are guys who are all stars, all NBA players. And they're all in similar categories too, you know, similar positions, all that stuff. So I got Jimmy Butler, 11. I got Paul George, 12. I got Chris Middleton, 13. And I have Jason Tatum, 14, after the season he just had. My thing on Tatum, and I love him. I've loved him since Duke. I saw him early. I've known about him since high school. This is a guy, you know, loved him picking. We'll see if he's the superstar, if he's, you know, Harden, Luka, Kawhi. I feel like people start pressing him up in that direction this year after the 30-point-per-game month or two he had, and it comes and goes. We've seen the 2-for-18 against Milwaukee. Is it there more often than not?
Come on, you can't. Every player has a bad game.
I know. But what was he seriously during this bubble stretch? 24 points per game? And you know, he's 22. It's unbelievable. He's getting better every single day.
Did you not watch him that last game?
Yes. Listen, all I'm saying is we're pushing him up toward being LeBron James, Giannis, Kawhi at this point. He's already cemented himself below that. We'll see if he gets there. It's not inevitable to me yet. He's got to do it.
There's only one LeBron James, so there's no reason to put him in that category.
I'm just talking in terms of ranking.
My problem with Jimmy Butler right now is that he can't shoot threes. Like, today's NBA, if you're a perimeter guy,
isn't that amazing? And he's gotten by this year. Unbelievable.
No one said a word really about it. But, yeah, he just all of a sudden can't shoot threes. Jimmy Butler is really, really good.
They have a million three-point shooters there, though. That's what gets them by.
You got to be – if you're a primary ball handler, you got to be able to hit threes. That's my thing. In today's NBA, if you're a primary ball handler and you can't hit threes, you're just limiting your team. That's why I'm so hard on Ben Simmons.
Paul George can hit threes, so maybe we flip
I think Paul George is definitely better than Jimmy Butler. If you're talking about those four players you just named, it was Jimmy Butler, Paul George, Tatum, who's the last guy?
Middleton.
Middleton is probably, honestly, and I hate the Bucks. This year he's proven himself, man. He's so efficient. He's such a
he's all NBA, all level, yep.
All level scorer. I would definitely put him above Tatum right now. I think Paul George would be so. Middleton, then Paul George, Tatum, and then Butler would be. That's my ranking.
Ooh, Middleton, the best of all of them. All right, and then George against Tatum. It's all close,
but
I mean,
George has been doing it. George is like a microwave scorer, and sure, he'll have a 5-for-18 night, but he put so much pressure on the defense, and I think he's such a smart offensive player. So, yeah.
Middleton's underrated. It's some of these, we were watching Team USA a year ago, and I still think of that. All these great guys just faltered for that team, and I'm just like, what's going on? Because then
who cares? International ball is different. Don't forget, Dele was averaging like a double double in international ball. it doesn't matter.
Andrew Bogut and Aaron Baines for a powerhouse.
Yeah, whatever, dude. Never ever stress international ball and worry about that mean for anything.
It's
a different world. No, it's just a different world.
I was having fun last summer, and they spoiled it. And now look where we are.
Yeah, they didn't put enough shooting on that team, and they didn't have enough size. And those international teams play together for years, and they just know each other. It's fine. Who cares?
All right, our top 10 players. These are some important matchups here, too, in the hierarchy, I believe. This year, Joel Embiid, still a top 10 player. We got into him. But is he better or worse than who, to me, at this point, is the best center in the NBA? And this is amazing because when we were having the conversation between this guy and Cousins back in the day, I was more of a Cousins guy. But Jokic gets better by the year. He slimmed out into this bubble. He's an all-world passer, and that Nuggets team, again, you know, top three in the West this year. I know you don't love them. I'm not a huge fan of them either, but this guy makes it happen there. He's the most important player there. And, you know, at this point, he's rebounding, he's scoring, he's doing everything he needs out there. And he looks like it's tough to have a center be your best player, but he's probably the closest you can get to being happy about that because he does everything.
Yeah, he's fine. I know he's better than advertised defensively as far as – but he doesn't move his feet very well. That's fine. You're nitpicking with that. I think this also because of durability, you got to put him over Embiid. I think if you were saying one game fully healthy, who do you want to build around? I would say Embiid, but, you know, Jokic, he's so big and strong, great passer. I get it. I get the love of him. I personally, like you said, I wouldn't want my center being the hub of my offense and being my primary playmaker because that's, to me, the wing players are what matter in the NBA. But sure, yeah.
We talked a lot about Lillard already. This guy, does he deserve to be in this class? Because he had a monster year. His team stinks. Bradley Beal hit 30 a game this year. Can do everything offensively. Like all three levels, this guy's probably the best in the league from all three levels. And he's getting better. This guy's young. He's going to be their core piece going forward. He signed on there, which, you know, probably isn't great for him. But does Beal belong in the top 10 in the same class as Lillard?
I probably would drop Beal because he's a great scorer, but he just doesn't give a damn about defense. I would probably put Beal. I know maybe all four Wizard fans are going to get pissed off. I'd probably put Beal under the Paul George.
Too bad.
Because he's great. He's a great scorer, wonderful scorer. I still would take Dame above him as a scorer. And again, the fact that he just plays zero defense, doesn't give a damn about defense. It has to matter. So, if we're talking about on the offensive side of the ball, sure, he's top five maybe in the league, top seven. But defense has to factor in. And Dame absolutely belongs in this class. We just said it earlier. He's probably the best point guard playing this season. You take most teams and say your third best player is just gone. Your second best player. The Nurkic is probably the second best player on that team. He's probably better than CJ. So you take any team and say your second best player is gone for the whole year, they're going to struggle. And so I don't really fault Dame for the struggles of the team this year. He's doing his best right now. They might not get in, but whatever. Dame, to me, is definitely a top 10 player.
He can do anything they need to, which is – this is interesting because I think this is where you start to build that line between the stars and the superstars.
And that's to me where Dame is. Dame is right outside of that top 5 to 7.
But would you rather have him or Anthony Davis?
Oh, him. Absolutely him, hands down. Anthony Davis is great.
I agree.
His numbers are amazing, but there's a reason that the Lakers are like his and on-off rating isn't everything. But it's been said all year. Somehow, when LeBron sits, the Lakers like aren't great, even when Anthony Davis on the floor. And I get it, the players around him, but he's supposed to be. If you're saying he's a top 5-7 player, you got to have that kind of impact.
And how long was he in New Orleans on his own?
And they made the playoffs like what? Yeah, two or three times. And so as talented as he is, this is the problem of having a big man as your best player. That even a talented big man like him, he can hound the ball, he can shoot a little bit. I would definitely take Dame over Anthony Davis.
What's this thing he doesn't want to play center? I mean, this is a team and him. And we'll see. Like, this is my Lakers skepticism. They end up having a guy on the floor they probably shouldn't, and they're getting thin. Like this, the discussion with them is you have two of the top six players.
I will just say this: let's see what they do in the playoffs, because I think in high leverage moments we're going to see Anthony Davis playing center. I think this is one of those things where, and this is smart, it's with LeBron James, they might have just said all season, you know what, we don't want to give them a lot of film of Anthony Davis playing center, because the more film a team has, the better they can plan for it, game plan for it. So we're going to save this for the special moments, save this for the moments when we really want to dominate, and we're going to see him play center line in the playoffs.
This is the discussion we had earlier to some degree. I actually don't feel good about this now that I look at it, but I'm going to stick by it. We'll discuss it. Luka 4, Kawhi 5. And this is all trajectory.
Yeah, I think
you're where Kawhi is going.
I think Dame is better than Luka right now. I think Dame is better than Luka.
Ooh, really?
Luka is amazing. Luka also is a subpar three-point shooter. He's a kind of crap free throw shooter. And again, that team was terrible in crunch time. That has to matter.
That team's also terrible. They have no, but I mean, they have Porzingis. That's huge.
So what does Portland have? It's him and CJ. And I get it.
They got Nurkic. Portland. They got Melo.
Nurkic just came back. Collins. And Melo was. Collins. Collins missed a big chunk of season injuries too. And Melo, I think, is being a little bit overrated. Like you said, I'm not signing that apology sheet. He's fine. The role they're asking to be, but he's still. This season, honestly, I think Dame had less to work with, and I think Dame was better than – I get it. The numbers look amazing for Luka, because Luka had that ball was in his hands all game. Dame averaged what this season? What did he average this season?
He had 37 in the – I'm going to guess it was touching 30, 28, 29.
Like 28, and probably he's probably one of the top four or five in assists also. Dame was great this season, man.
Yeah, Dame was great. Top five MVP guy for sure, especially he got screwed by them not counting the bubble stuff of the awards there. Now we get into our top three. So real quick on Kawhi too. The Kemba discussion, that applies for him too. The knees, the quad, all that stuff.
It doesn't concern me, because I think they are literally saying we're getting ahead of the problem, so we're going to keep him on the bubble wrap and limit his minutes. The last couple of games, he looked great. Healthy, physically, he looks great right now, because teams – this is a knock people use against him. Oh, well, if you can't go, full board in the season, how good are you really? Well, you're still great. And I think with the Clippers, they just wanted to be extra cautious with him, limit his minutes, limit his games. They said it was injury management, whatever. I think they just basically were saying, we're going to just put as little miles as possible on you, so in the playoffs, you can go for 45 minutes if we need you to go. So, I just think there's, other than you can knock Kawhi for his passing. He's not a great passer, not a great playmaker, but he's still averaging 5 assists a game or something like that. So it is what it is. The guy is like a robot, a basketball robot. He's like an assassin out there. So, yeah, I definitely have him above Luka.
Right now, I put a little trajectory
again,
stuff into
that. Defense.
Yeah.
Defense has to matter. Luka does not play defense. I get Luka's a great offensive player. He's a defensive turnstile. And Kawhi is one of the best defenders in the league. Like that has to matter.
That does matter for sure. And this year, I put Kawhi ahead of him 100%. Our top three is our MVP race pretty much this year. And we'll see, we won't get into the Durant thing, the Kyrie stuff, all that, the missing guys. I have Giannis, best player in the league, hands above. He's going to be back-to-back MVP. He's rising. LeBron's falling. LeBron's my number two. And James Harden rounds out that list at number three. I mean, any one of those guys in your top three, and I'm not disagreeing with anybody, but I think Giannis, especially as he starts to develop that three-point shot, and it's coming. It comes and goes, but it's getting better. The free throw thing with him is shaky, but you're picking hairs there. He scores, he defends, he passes. He's in the perfect system for himself at this point. And wow, does he get the calls too, which drives me crazy. But when you reach the top of the league, you get the calls at that rate. And even though he's foul happy sometimes, the refs are there to help him out at the end of the game. And that's what we've seen at the bubble too. So that's going to help.
Pretty ridiculous. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I got the same order you do. Giannis is, to me, maybe not head and shoulders above LeBron, but at least head. Because LeBron is great. And Giannis, he took a heavier load. he, you know, 12, 13 rebounds a game. You know, he's basically a center running the, you know, playing the perimeter. It's incredible. Giannis to me is hands down the best player in the game. LeBron James is still incredible. His bubble, well, LeBron did not play well in the bubble. I get it. He's just out there getting warm, ready for the playoffs. We'll see a different LeBron in the playoffs. I'm pretty confident.
The defense thing with him too, and I get it. Like, the load management thing works for him, but it does drive me crazy when I hear his – you know, I hate to say disciples and stuff, but the people, you know, funneling the word from him. He can't defend Kawhi. You know, you need someone else there who can defend Kawhi. You can't defend this guy. Like, come on. Especially come playoff time. LeBron's going to have to guard the best guy on the other team. Forget KCP. Forget Avery Bradley staying home, all this stuff. Like, LeBron's going to have to do it when push comes to shove.
I'm excited to see LeBron have to defend for a full game because he got credit, and rightly so, for that strong defense he played against Kawhi and Paul George at the end of that game. That was incredible. Tip your hat to him. Let's see him do it for a full game. We've seen LeBron. He has those lapses. He has those times where he just doesn't defend. So let's see him do it for a full game, a full series. But he's awesome. He's still LeBron. He's, you know, maybe lost a little bit, obviously, but he's still so smart, one of the smartest players in the game. James Harden, that's one of those instances where, sure, I think he's at least maybe a net neutral on defense, but he's not as bad as he used to be, but he carries such a load on offense you say a player like him is top three. And that's where I am with Dame versus Luka. Sure, Luka has all these great numbers offensively. But I think, Dame offensively, 261. Like, who does that, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'm with you. Your top three, I'm going to give you the right order. And I think even like you said, you got Kawhi 4 and then Luka 5. Is that right?
Yep. They're flip-flops for me at this point. I mean, I'm still so impressed by what Doncic is doing at his age. I use trajectory in this a little bit. Luka is just going to keep getting better and better. He's got MVPs in his future.
We ranking them for what they're doing now or for their
future. That's true. That's true. We're doing it for now. So Kawhi's 4 to me. You convince me. Harden, people hate him. And when we look back on him, I know people are going to love him. So let's just enjoy him while he's here. The guy's an all-time talent. And when he's all said and done, he might be the greatest offensive talent we've ever seen.
Thank you to Snotty Drippin, a.k.a. James Hollis. Or I guess it's the other way around. I've known him as Snotty for so long. He's always a blast to talk to. You can find him on Twitter, of course, at Snotty Drippin. And on podcasts all over the NBA world. You can subscribe to Dome Theory. We're pushing 100 episodes now. Can you believe that? Since the Bobcast got started in 2016. We'll have something special for 100 and beyond. A big plan for some documentary series that we're going to be rolling out on here. We have visuals. We have pros, stars, exclusive interviews on CLNS Media. On the YouTube channel, I've been producing almost everything you see up there, save for Nick. I'd go back and check out my interview with Jared Weiss from a couple weeks ago, too, where we discussed those playoff formats I mentioned in the first half. Justin Rowan looking back on the decision. And the Snoop Dogg versus series continued with Rick Ross this time against 2 Chainz. Rick Ross, by most measures, came out victorious in that one. We talked about the versus series last week. Next week on Dome Theory, little teaser, there may be an NBA player on in talks with a guy coming out of the bubble either next week or 2 weeks. So there'll be a great show next week either way, but if you want to hear my interview with an NBA guy in the next few weeks, subscribe. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, all these different platforms. I'm Bobby Manning. Head out on vacation for the weekend. Monday night, we got Celtics 76ers getting started. You can read me over at CelticsBlog.com and watch me on the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media. Can't wait for this postseason. The games have been so great already. And this is regular season. We're kind of down.